Hi, this is Matt Beebe. Primary results are in, and we're clearly moving toward a rancorous, less experienced, and more divisive body ruled by a liberal sympathizer. But enough about the Tribcast. Let's talk about the Texas House. Here's your baby-faced host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thanks, Matt. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the second week of June. Joining me is editor-in-chief and CEO Evan Smith.
Hey, Reeve.
Hello. Ross Ramsey, the executive editor.
Howdy.
It's the nicest Reeve has been ever.
You wonder what's up.
I said hello.
What do you want?
Hello. I could be nicer than hello.
Is he up for a job review? Is that?
We don't have those. He is now.
It's in the handbook, Reeve.
Well, that's a joke no one gets. Ben Philpott.
Barbara Nags,
KUT, we'll get it. And the Texas Tribune.
I'm contractually obligated to say that the Yankees are the best team in baseball.
Ouch. It's got to hurt.
Who are you rooting for in the NBA Finals?
The Yankees.
The Yankees. Yes, sir.
Well, LeBron James is kind of like the A-Rod of basketball, isn't he?
Oh, see, you just made me even more thunderous.
Kevin Durant is just so great.
What's a Texan to do, though? Cheer for something from Oklahoma?
Cheer for Kevin Durant because he did spend time in Texas.
They show the slow motion of this guy, and he's like the guy in the Matrix. I mean, he's just like, you know, you see
he's
this
like
shot.
He's like Jason Schwartzman in a Wes Anderson movie in slow motion.
Well, I saw a great tweet.
He's one Kink song away from being in a Wes Anderson movie.
I saw a great tweet that said, you know, once again, that Kevin Durant proves once again the only way Oklahoma teams win is with Texans.
Okay, so what do you think that means for the Republican convention?
Who was the Kevin Durant of the Republican convention? Ted Cruz, the Kevin Durant?
No. I mean, I think Rick Perry's still
is
the Kevin
David Duhurst
Durant.
The LeBron of the Republican convention?
I think that belongs to Joe Strauss.
Joe Strauss is the LeBron?
Maybe so.
Really? Explain.
Have you seen his half-hour special?
Is that right?
All right, let's back up.
good luck.
Suddenly, the moderator.
There are not enough breadcrumbs in the world to get us back to where you want us to go.
For those who are still listening, we're going to try again.
By which you mean Makoviak,
right?
The only person still listening.
Ben did attend the Republican convention in Fort Worth.
Saw Makoviak there.
Saw Makoviak. Well, now he's going to stop listening now that he's gotten a shout out.
Yeah.
Ross went to the Democratic convention in Houston.
I did.
And I went to Portland.
Yeah.
Evan left the
state. Is that the Libertarian convention?
It was.
So you didn't go to
Green
Portland,
Party,
Texas,
I think.
So what's the big news? Obviously, the biggest news is going to come out of the Republican convention just by the sheer fact that they're bigger. It's a bigger
you assume, especially at the statewide level, you assume that whoever the nominees are out of the Republican Party are going to be the next elected officials in the state of Texas. And for the rest, you've got, you know, we'll have 90, 95 Republicans in the House. We'll have 2/3 in the Senate, almost.
Almost 2/3.
Depends on Wendy Davis.
You'll have 19 or 20.
Right.
Okay. All
right. Right.
But the big mystery coming out of this whole thing, just to speed you along a little bit.
Yes, please.
Is that were people saying Boo or Do or Cruz when they were shouting at the speakers?
Or Brian Hughes.
They were definitely not saying Do.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure they were not saying Do. You know, there may have been one or two Cruises, and we're talking about the very first time it happened when Governor Perry got up and got everyone all excited, you know, talking about, we need more Texans in politics in Washington.
Is that your Rick Perry impression?
Well, sort of a cross.
That was a cross between Perry and Dewhurst.
No, it sounded like the rich Texan on The Simpsons. Pow, pow, pow. That was horrible.
I think that's what he played on the campaign trail.
That was horrible.
But he said that.
Ben has on a 30-inch
Stetson right now. Do the rest of the Tribcast that way.
Everyone starts screaming and cheering, and then he goes, like my friend David Dewhurst. And it's really funny. If you go back and listen to the tape.
Can I boo your impression? I mean, that was horrible.
Do your impression.
It's really great. You listen to the tape. There's a good 5 seconds of you can hear the recognition.
Reeve and I were watching it on the television in Emily's office, and we were going, look, Dewhurst just got booed.
It was
no question.
But it was so great.
It wasn't even a question.
It was, right? it was yay.
It was,
wait a second. Boo.
And he hadn't been booed.
Right.
Yeah. No, he got booed. Dewhurst's name got booed. When Dewhurst then came, and there may have been some crews there, but no, it was booze. When Dewhurst came to the stage the next day, there were some initial boos, but he came out with his wife. The first thing he said when he got there was, I know why Republicans are great in Texas, and it's because of you. And the crowd,
yelled, you.
Yeah. Right. The crowd was like, well, I like myself, so they clapped. And then he
very
just
clever. Yeah.
And you heard a couple of people shushing.
But then
other people.
But didn't he then say something about Cruz and got
well? That
again?
Was on Saturday. So Friday was his regular speech. Saturday, he and Cruz both took the stage to, you know, campaign for themselves. And he did get booed when he mentioned that Cruz was a pinko communist. And I didn't say that. But
I think what he said was he gets a lot of money from outside of Texas. Was that the thing?
Right. He did get booed some at that.
You notice what they're doing, by the way, what the Dewhurst people are doing on press releases? They're highlighting the D in Ted and the C in Cruz to make DC.
Right. And they've got a new website that's
their
Ted
whole
DC
thing is and, that he's a DC insider nice. And right. blah, blah, blah.
DC Comics villain.
Right.
Right. So they're trying to win influence over the people that read all the way down in the press releases.
But it was, you know,
you and me.
I mean, after the Perry thing, the press corps up there was essentially wondering exactly how bad it would be when Dewhurst got to the stage on Friday, because if just the mention of his name,
but in fact,
the whole
it wasn't all
crowd,
that. No, but bad. It wasn't. Although his being booed made the national press. You know, I heard Chuck. I was in Portland on Monday and listening to the Daily Rundown.
Right.
And Chuck Todd was talking about Dewhurst being booed. And I thought, well, that can't be good that they're talking nationally about this.
First day's news. And you could tell the second day. I mean, I'm in Houston watching this stuff. And you could tell the second day that somebody had gone into caucus meetings or something and talked to all of those partisans and said, now, y'all behave. The press is watching. Look at all these headlines this morning. And the next day, they're shushing. The crowd is starting to boo and shushing itself at the same time. Yep. It's like they started policing. Steve Munisteri had something really interesting to say before the convention. Usually, you know, you ask people, you know, what are you worried about at this thing? And then nobody ever answers that question. But Munisteri jumps in and says, I'll tell you what I'm worried about. I got 6 or 7 factions in this party. I've got the Tea Party. I've got the traditionals. I've got the movement conservatives. I've got this. I've got that. I've got the
Ron
other thing.
Paul people.
I'm scared to death this thing's going to blow up. He said, we've had some problems in other states. And he kept the lid on the
thing. And the very first, the first time he got on stage Thursday morning for the convention, within the first 5 minutes, he starts talking about how we all need to respect
this
each other.
Munisteri. And they were not yelling boo, they were yelling moo, right. Munisteri.
Right.
Yeah.
The you know, the horse whisperer here, trying to calm them all down. So if all they got, I think, I haven't talked to him after the convention, but talking to him before and knowing what he was worried about, he's probably glad it was only just some boos.
How surprised
Munisteri
are you?
Munisteri is a boxing manager.
Well, see, he's still in the business.
He understands how to deal with fights. Yeah. How surprised are you that Strauss did not get a less kind reception?
Well, they did it in a very careful
way. They snuck him in.
It was like, you know, it sounded like it was the, you know, going to your 4-year-old's ballerina rehearsal. They march all the House members across the stage. Here's your Texas House. And they all tromp across the stage, get their 20 seconds of spotlight. Strauss pops up in the middle of this, does a 2-minute speech, really not enough time for anybody to organize, and walks off. I mean, you were sitting there.
No, that's exactly what he did. They did not. They never mentioned, and now your House Speaker.
All right, so I read something last night that I had not necessarily read in the press accounts. I hope the hell it wasn't in the Tribune, because then I'm going to show myself to be.
Is this about the community college report that I wrote about?
No, that was
2 days ago.
Nobody reads your stories.
I don't read anything that you do. No, that Strauss was voted down as an at-large delegate to the Republican convention. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
That he was denied a slot representing the state at the Republican, and it was he was denied this by the activists. Is that correct?
Well, that would be the people on the floor. You know, they did this to Kay Hutchison. They did it to George Bush.
Didn't they do it to George Bush when he was governor?
Yeah, right, 94.
Right, famous liberal, George W. Bush,
right. Before he was governor, as he was, you know.
It was not while. I thought it was while he was governor in 96, I thought,
right.
But anyway, so what do we take? No significance to that? No.
No, he'll just go under a different label. I mean, you know, the office holders get to go to the convention. That's the way it works. And, you know, he'll go under some other guys, maybe not as a delegate or something else, but, you know, he'll get on the floor and, you know, he's the Speaker of the Texas House.
He'll be ambassador to
I mean,
Court of St. James in the Romney administration anyway, so which is, his time as Speaker
well,
is limited.
You know, and bringing up Romney, one other interesting booing incident during it was Kay Bailey Hutchison gets to have her farewell speech as an elected official before the GOP convention, and they give her the task of rallying the convention goers behind Mitt Romney, which just seemed like, you know, why did she draw the short straw?
Right, one perceived inauthentic conservative rallying the troops for another perceived inauthentic conservative.
See what they do to you?
So she gets up there, and of course, she immediately starts, she talks about Romney for like the first 5-7 minutes of her speech. She then moves on to talking about herself and her own career, and everybody's nice to her. You know, they were not booing her, but they were ripping into Romney. You had Ron Paul people starting to chant, Ron Paul, Ron Paul. Kay trying to very awkwardly say, yeah, that's right, Romney, you
know? Ron Paul. Please.
Didn't Dewhurst have a similar attempt at something like that when someone shouted Kenya and he said, oh, West Virginia?
Yeah, well, that was it, you know, yeah.
Free Holies.
You want to make some birther headlines.
Yeah, Freeliotis, right, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to make birther headlines, somebody, he said, you know, we should send, and this was a refrain that all the Republicans, or several of the Republican speakers were saying, you know, goal number one is to send Barack Obama back to Chicago. Well, after about two or three speakers said, send him back to Chicago, you finally had a few people in the crowd yell out, no, send him to Kenya. And yeah, Dewhurst misheard and said, West Virginia? Well, sure, why not?
It's lovely.
And then he's like, no, country. Kenya! And he took a good 13 seconds to just kind of stop and think about what he wanted to say. And then he said, sure, wherever Barack Obama wants to go, I'm fine with it as long as it's out of Washington.
Okay,
so,
then.
So what do we take from all the booing? Does this mean that
this is going to be a competitive runoff. We know it.
I think they let off some steam, and you know, the only race that has any heat in it, I think Evan's right, the only race that has any heat in it here is the Senate race. And it's a classic. It sets up exactly the way somebody like Dewhurst doesn't want it to set up. Right. It sets up in a year of insurgence as an insurgent versus an establishment guy.
And they need to spend a lot of time tearing Cruz down, because they don't really have – I mean, this is no knock on the lieutenant governor, but from the perspective of how the campaign has been run and will be run, they don't really have an affirmative case to make for Dewhurst. For him to win this runoff, he needs to tear Cruz down.
Well,
would you agree with that approach? I think you got to do both.
I think you got to, you know, here's why you're voting for Dewhurst. Here's why you're voting against Cruz. I
mean, can you be affirmative?
They've got to play that game.
Play the role of Dave Carney or somebody else in the Dewhurst campaign now. Make the affirmative case for Dewhurst. If you ask me right now, what is the affirmative case for Dewhurst? I could make the generic Republican or the generic conservative case, but what is the specific case?
At the Democratic convention, Paul Sadler made the case for Dewhurst. He said, you know, the thing about Cruz is that there were only two guys, this is Paul Sadler talking, there were only two guys on the Republican ballot who were qualified to be in the United States Senate, and it's because they've both been office holders, because we know what they would do if they were given something to make a decision on, and we'd seen them in action. Tom Leppert's not running anymore. David Dewhurst is still in the race. Ted Cruz, we don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do. He's never been in office before.
So the affirmative case for Dewhurst is that he's been in elective office?
The other guy has no experience. He doesn't know what he's doing.
But substantively, what is the case for Dewhurst?
If you like Texas, I mean, Dewhurst's record is Perry's record to some extent. You know, if you like the state of things in Texas then you like what he's done.
That's the generic message that Evan was talking about. But I think that you could take that message and focus it maybe just in DFW and try to make sure those Leopard people come out.
Which he's attempting to do.
Here's the other thing. You know, we marveled for a long time about Rick Perry being this guy who'd been in the establishment for 25 years running as an insurgent candidate. David Dewhurst needs to, you know, go steal that songbook.
He needs to run as an outsider, even though he's been against
Washington. The problem right now is that that's kind of a commonplace, and he hasn't made a really strong
case. But he has not been against Washington or against Obama in the aggressive way that, for instance, Perry has been, or, by the way, in the aggressive way that Cruz has been. Right. Is that really the Dewhurst brand?
I think he needs to get there. He needs to get, you know, to a point where the people who want to storm the castle are at least comfortable with him, and the people who are already in the castle aren't uncomfortable with him.
Let me ask the question again, a different way.
Yeah.
What is the material substantive difference between Cruz and Dewhurst? In other words, imagine one world in which it's Senator Dewhurst and another world in which it's Senator Cruz. Substantively, how would those two worlds differ?
I'm not sure that there's a ton of difference there, you know, in terms of content. I mean, there's clearly some style differences. There are clearly some experience differences.
But that's interesting. So if you play that out,
right?
Don't the style differences play to Cruz's advantage given the circumstances on the ground and the atmosphere out there? If there are no substantive differences,
I'm going to equivocate here. I think the people that are going to show up in a July 31st runoff are going to be the people who vote in water bond elections and school board elections on one hand, and those tend to be older Texans and older Republicans, and that's Dewhurst's demographic. He owns that demographic. The other group that shows up on July 31st are activists and people, you know, fire breathers, the people who are at the Republican convention, Tea Party, people like that. That's Cruz's audience, and I think, you know, it's a turnout question. Which of those groups outnumbers the other one? If Dewhurst can hold off the insurgents or at least satisfy them that he would be okay, that they don't boo when he takes the stage, you know, on July 31st, and seal his vote with the other group, then I think he wins. But I think the momentum coming out of the first round was clearly for Cruz. He's like, we've got him now right where we want him. He said in January he wanted to finish second.
Yeah.
He said, you know, the object in this race is to get into the runoff.
And the week before the primary, he said, we get to the runoff, we win the runoff.
Right.
Period. I mean.
Right. David Dewhurst, you know, somewhere in the back of his mind, if he's thinking about this at all on that level, is wishing the court hadn't moved this primary out of March.
Oh, my God. Can't
you think?
Don't you think?
Yeah. I think those 3 months just ate him alive.
It's not helped. But, of course, on the other hand, had it been back in March, when Santorum was still in the race and the presidential was still alive, we don't know what that would have been.
Except nobody knew who Cruz was. Dewhurst hadn't started advertising for him yet. You know, Dewhurst gave Cruz half of his name ID, even if it did say Chinese tire dealer next to it.
That, in his attempts
I need
to tear him down.
Wait, I need tires. Hold on.
In his attempts to tear him down, he raised his name ID, right? I mean, that's the sort of the knock on their approach.
You know, that's
so
one of the questions about that. You know, when you're doing the autopsy on this, why did he attack someone who was behind him? And then he did it again at the end. He attacked Leopard at the end, you know, which
true.
Not only didn't elevates. Seal the end of the thing, but now, you know, you have to wonder if Leopard is going to endorse anybody in this race, or if he's just going to say, forget it, I'm going home, see you guys.
Well, was there any news out of the Democratic Convention, Ross?
Well, there was.
I mean, Hinojosa. Well, no. I think that Hinojosa's election is consequential.
It's
right?
a different story. There's three sort of lines coming out of there. One of them is they finally, you know, the party that is basically, you know, in Texas, the party of Hispanics, is finally led by an Hispanic. It's the first time in their history. It's their only their second Spanish speaker, I think. And, you know, Bill White was the first, so that was, you know, at least he tried. He's pretty good. So they did Hinojosa. The other thing is the Democrats are at this place where they don't have anybody to protect anymore, and so they're trying to figure out how to rebuild this thing. Does this thing rebuild out of a fractious Republican Party that may be shedding some independents and some moderates who will vote for moderate or conservative Democrats? So there's one of their questions. And the other one is that they are looking, as they have been, but they're looking at their next generation and trying to figure out, are there any stars in here? Who pulls us out of this hole?
Are there any stars in here not named Castro?
Well, there's a couple named Castro. There's one named Davis. There's, you know, they've got...
She has to survive this election cycle.
Right. And she, they've got some names in front of them, but they're trying to figure out whether organization will rebuild the party or rebuild Democratic candidacies, or whether stars will rebuild it.
And, well, can you rebuild the party if you don't field candidates for offices on the ballot?
Yep,
you've
right.
got a slate of seats in 2014, statewide office holder slots, that are theoretically, we don't know, but theoretically going to be open.
Right.
Let's assume that the press talk as opposed to the governor's office talk is right, and the governor doesn't run for re-election. You will have an open race for governor, potentially an open race for lieutenant governor, open race for attorney general, comptroller, land commissioner, ag commissioner.
Right.
All those.
Right.
If you do not have Democratic candidates filing in a serious way for those offices, then you cannot call yourself a party.
Right.
Well, you know, I talked to him a couple days after he got elected.
Him, Hinojosa.
Yes, sorry. And
Ross.
Yeah, Ross. Hey, Ross, how you doing?
Hey, fine.
And he, you know, I asked him, so what do you do first? Is it fundraising? Is it better candidates? Is it turning out the vote? You know, what's the chicken and egg story here? And he said it was voter turnout first, because he does think that they have some people that can run for office. And he feels like, you know, money will come when money comes, that there is, you know, there's plenty of money leaving the state, right? But none of it being spent here.
It's all that money being given to Sadler.
Well, if you're a donor, I mean, you know, Sadler actually talked about this at some length, and so did Keith Hampton, who's running for the Court of Criminal Appeals against Sharon Keller. And they both said, you know, if you can get in front of the voters to make the case, in this case, Sadler's talking about beating Grady Yarbrough in a primary. And he says, you know, this is a guy who ran twice as a Republican and under a different spelling of his name. And when you tell voters that, they say, okay, I'll vote for Sadler. He said, the problem is you can't get the fuel to tell voters about that. You can't get enough money together to tell voters about that. And when you go into a general election, and it's Hampton versus Sharon Keller, and Sadler versus either Cruz or Dewhurst, they can't even raise the money at this point to make the case to find out whether voters, having seen that case, would prefer a Democrat over a Republican. So they're
It's self-fulfilling.
The problem with the chicken and the egg argument is that there's no chicken and no egg here. They've just got to invent it almost from the ground up.
Is it possible that they haven't found a case that people are willing to put money into yet?
Yeah. I mean, they Bill White had a well-financed campaign, and that didn't work. And the finance people look at it and say, well, look, you know, we had a reasonably good candidate. We had a guy who had some experience in politics. He had the money he needed. And here we are at 43-44% again. You know, why am I pouring money down that hole until somebody can show me 47 or 48 or
maybe that's why he's Hinojosa's pushing the turnout angle. I mean, he made this case at the convention, I believe, or at least in interviews after he got elected, and same case with me, which is that if you add up the people that align with the Democratic ideals, with the ideals of the Texas Democrats, then he says that 70% of the state's Democratic.
Well, 71% of the state, 71% of the people who voted in the primary voted in the Republican primary.
Yeah.
You know, that's a complete flip from where Texas was just a few years
ago. And even if you discount some of that for mischief on the part of Democrats voting in a Republican primary, clearly the idea that 70% of the state is Democratic if held at knife point is crazy.
Right.
Well, he says a lot of it. I mean, some of it is backed up by a story in the Tribune today. What, 2 million Hispanics?
But this is the old, I remember being in Tony Sanchez's map room 12 years ago.
Right.
It was no more true then than it is now that it is low-hanging fruit to simply go out and get all the Hispanics who are eligible and registered or non-registered. It's just not the case.
No, he doesn't say it's easy. Right. But he says it looks like that's his number one goal.
But I want to come back to Ross's point, which is that the fractiousness of the Republican Party does present an opportunity.
It does.
The problem is that I don't think that the displaced Republicans who feel that the Republican Party has become too doctrinaire are necessarily going to respond to that by crossing over and voting Democratic.
Here's the theory, and you know, this is the Democrats' theory, so they own this. But in the 80s, the Democrats got so far to the left nationally that Texas Democrats, conservative Democrats in Texas, were, I'm not a Mondale guy. I'm gonna do something else. They became Reagan Democrats, and then they became soft Republicans, and now they are Yellow Dog Republicans. And the theory here from the Democratic side is that the right wing of the Republican Party, or the conservatives in the Republican Party, and by that they mean any number of groups, so there's fuzz there, but that they think those people are getting so far out that the average Republican will say, I'm getting uncomfortable with these people, and do the same thing in reverse. Even if that's true, it's a slow process, and you know, there's only a few signs of it. Another piece of this that's actually sort of more interesting is that Dallas and Harris counties have flipped locally to the Democratic Party. Right. And so, you know, when you talk to some of the people in the Democratic Party, they say, look, what happens when you do that, when your courthouse goes Democratic, when your county courthouse goes Democratic, is that you get people who are otherwise Republican business people supporting Democratic incumbents, and they become ticket splitters. And he said that's, and this is, you know, some of the Democrats will say in Dallas and Harris counties and in places where we're flipping local elections,
that's the hope.
That's where this starts. Yeah. So,
but also with, you know, sort of, it seems like one of the stories coming out of the conventions was that the Republicans may be sort of getting ahead of them, even on this game of sort of reaching out to the moderate Republicans with this move on the guest worker program that they added to their platform. And the Democrats, even though, you know, I assume they would welcome more moderate immigration policies, were angry about them doing this to their platform because they said, oh, they're lying to you. They're not going to be that moderate in their approach. But, you know, you don't see
the platform this time matters no more than the platform has mattered historically.
Right. And they're running after the same voters. I mean, this is, you know, what you were saying about Hinojosa, Ben. I mean, you know, and what the Republicans are doing. They're both betting that someday, somehow, the Hispanics in the state start to vote in the same proportion that Anglos do and that blacks do. And if Hispanics do, in fact, vote that way, then however they vote, they'll be in large control of, you know, in large measure in control of the elections. And both the parties want to be lined up with that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting little example of it here in Austin, even with our 5% turnout for city elections. Right. If you know, there have been groups that have gone into East Austin over and over and over again trying to get the Hispanic base there in East Austin to come out and vote. And if they did, instead of one Hispanic, which is ordained by some kind of gentleman's agreement that they came up with years ago, that one seat on the city council would be a Hispanic seat and one seat would be for African American. If it weren't for, you know, they would just, Hispanics would take over every seat on the city council if they simply turned out and voted.
Turnout.
Because nobody turns out in the Austin city election. Of course, I've said the same thing if the Tea Party wanted to take over the Austin city council. They could probably very easily do it. They might actually motivate voters more than other groups.
Did you hear anyone, I guess at the Democratic convention, talking about the preparing of the budgets for the session and the fact that the leadership just advised everyone to prepare for a potential 10% cut?
They didn't. I kind of thought it would come up. You know, what the legislative budget board and the governor told the agencies to do was to prepare a flat budget based on what you've got now, and also to prepare a budget that cuts 10% of what you have now, just to see what it looks like, see what programs, see how you'd prioritize and all that kind of stuff. So they didn't tell them to actually cut their budgets. They said just, you know, let's game this out. And yep. There were a couple of swipes at it, but I didn't really hear much at the convention. There was some conversation, although this hadn't really been a conversation in the elections, in most of the elections so far in either primary, but there was some conversation about these are the people who cut the budget and took this money out of public education, took this money out of higher education. There was some of that. But in terms of going forward, it wasn't as strong as I thought it would be.
I mean, isn't that the case you would have to make if you have people that are upset about that? People were expecting that to be like a big thing, right? Last session, when you had teachers coming and, you know, rallying on the Capitol, they thought, oh, this is really going to come back to bite the Republican leadership next time around. But that doesn't seem to be coming to fruition yet.
It hasn't happened to this point. I mean, you know, there's some question as to whether the school cuts that take place at the beginning of the next school year in September will, you know, be impactful enough in a political way that voters will, you know, have that in mind when they go to the polls in November. But, you know, there's not really even much certainty over that.
You're not worried about the budget, Evan?
Me? Wow. That's so 6 months from now.
Anything
he's already instituted a 10% cut here at
that's
the Tribune.
Right.
They have more money.
And I know where I'm starting. You know,
They all the signs right now are that they're going to have more money going into this next session, you know, than they did last session, and you know,
but more does not mean a surplus, right?
No, but more means that they can undo some of the things that they did, so they can say, you know, don't worry your pretty little head, calm down, we'll be writing a budget, and it'll.
Does it mean they can meet population growth on some of the Medicaid and
I don't know that there's that much money.
I don't know how you can do it without a surplus, because you're going to have that alleged structural deficit will provide you with a bunch of,
you know, and one
steps behind, and you're going to have to take $5 billion or so out for the Medicaid costs that were kicked down the road from the last session.
Right. The big hinge in all of this is, I think, going to, you know, from the United States Supreme Court within the next week or so.
Maybe even today, when they rule on health care. Could be today.
And you know, that will ripple through the budget one way or the other. You know, I mean, and it may be that, you know, all of the numbers that we kind of have in mind about Medicaid and Medicare and Health and Human Services in particular are completely different as a result of whatever the Supreme Court does. So those numbers are even fuzzier than they usually are.
Right.
Did any important changes to the Democratic platform make any news, like the guest worker program did?
Well, they embraced same-sex marriage, right?
Right.
Marriage equality.
The Democrats did a pretty good job a few years ago of, let's take all of the bright, shiny, sharp objects off the table and make this more, you know, more platitudinous. You know, they're if you read those two platforms side by side, the Republican platform has been very specific and very prescriptive. And it's like, we want to do this, we don't want to do that, we love this, we don't like that. And the Democratic thing has been more of like a statement of principles, so that their politicians, their office holders, when they're asked if they support the platform, aren't answering or to a greater extent not answering to a list of particulars. If you watch Republican politicians, and in any number of cases from Bush on down, you say, do you support the platform? They go, I haven't read it yet. I mean, it seems to be the standard answer.
Platforms don't matter.
There's some stuff in there I'm not going to sign off on. Yeah. Platforms don't matter except to partisans.
Right. The platform of this TribCast doesn't matter at all.
It doesn't.
I haven't read it. It's like our handbook.
And like the conventions, this TribCast is now over, isn't it?
I think we should gavel out. All in favor?
We have a few minutes of awkward silence still on the agenda.
Well, let me add one thing just because it's... fine.
Right.
You know, while the Democrats and Republicans were doing this, so were the Greens and so were the Libertarians. And,
true.
And,
all right.
And
on that note...
Well, theirs were actually consequential because unlike the other two, they actually choose candidates at these things.
Right.
Ross just
remained on Patrick Dixon's Christmas card list.
Yeah, there you go.
Mentioned the Libertarian Convention.
You know, they determined 6 races in the House last year, right? You know, it wasn't that they won the races, but they had enough votes to pull the races.
To pull the races in one direction.
Right. So,
well, and you talk about where are we going to see some of these fractures in the Republican Party? We may see them
going to the Greens
more quick. Well, no, but we may see them more quickly in going to Libertarians. No,
Ross makes a point. A good story for somebody might be to go down the list and say, which are the 5 races in which Libertarians have the greatest potential to throw the election to one side or another?
Right. Somebody might already be working on that.
Somebody might already be.
A smart person. We should let Ben get back to that.
That person will be exempted from the 10% cut.
All right. On behalf of Evan, Ben, Ross, and our producer, Todd.
And the Yankees.
About whom, if you have any comments or questions, you can email tribcast@texastribune.org. This is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Check, 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 check. Reeve's a jerk. Check.